Hi, you're listening to What's the Deal, our investment banking series here on JP Morgan's Making Sense podcast channel. I'm your host, Matthew Chan, head of JP Morgan's sustainability and ESG engagement in Asia Pacific. Now, today I'm joined by Arslan Matafar, our new head of the Development Finance Institution at JP Morgan, also known as the JP Morgan DFI or JPM DFI for short. Now, together we're going to discuss the opportunities Arslan sees in development finance, especially in emerging markets and particularly in the Asia Pacific region where I am based. Thanks for joining me, Arslan.
Thank you, Matthew. It's a pleasure to be here.
You might have recently heard Arslan's insightful podcast with Evan Junik, where they discuss the latest JP Morgan DFI annual report and the Impact Disclosure Task Force. Today, I have Arslan joining me to share his insights on the latest trends in development finance in Asia Pacific. Now, this topic is of keen interest to me, our firm, as well as investors both globally and in Asia Pacific. And many of us know that balancing climate transition and economic, social, and environmental objectives in this region is particularly challenging. Yet, the global achievement of the UN's Sustainable Development Goals will depend on progress in Asia Pacific. So let's dive in. Arslan, you recently assumed the role of head of the JP Morgan DFI to lead its mission in mobilizing private capital in support of sustainable development. Now, how would you summarize the year 2023 in terms of development finance, including in the Asia Pacific's emerging markets?
I think 2023 was a bit of a mixed year. On one hand, the global recession that many predicted didn't happen. That's good news. Consumer spending remained pretty resilient and supply chains normalized. And as companies started to diversify their supply chain to prevent any bottlenecks, specifically in Asia Pacific, we saw that benefiting a lot of other emerging markets, Asian countries. But at the same time, 2023 was the hottest year on record. It marked the midway point between 2015, when the UN Sustainable Development Goals were announced. And as you all know, that's the agenda to reduce poverty and reduce inequality and provide for basic human needs while preserving our natural ecosystems and combating climate change, with a target to be achieved by 2030. So 2023 was the midway point. And the UN commissioned something they called the SDG Stocktake to evaluate how far we've progressed against that agenda. And what they found was 85% of the goals are still off track. So that was quite an alarming find, showing that there was still a lot to be done.
Right.
Now, for JP Morgan DFI in 2023, we evaluated about 736 transactions to have anticipated development impact, meaning that they financed companies and organizations that had concrete plans to address acute development challenges in their geographies. About 19% of that came from the Asia Pacific region. That included financing regional development banks, such as the Asian Development Bank, who then on-lends to projects and to entities in APAC that are addressing development challenges. But it also included financing directly companies and governments in the region that have concrete plans for addressing the SDGs. As you would imagine, the large countries like China and India were big components of that number, but we also saw transactions in Mongolia, Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand. So it was quite diverse across the region.
Now, we also hear sometimes that identifying suitable projects and opportunities for sustainable development investment in emerging markets in Asia Pacific can be challenging and sometimes a limiting factor in capital inflows into the region. My question is, how can JP Morgan's DFI help to address this challenge and bridge that gap that exists between impact capital on one hand and investable opportunities on the other?
Yeah, Matt, here's what sometimes is paradoxical, because on one hand, you see that volume of capital that is seeking environmental and social returns to continue to grow. By some estimates, the volume of that ESG capital is as large as $40 trillion of assets under management. And, you know, some of that is mainly around integrating just ESG scores and factors, but about 10% of that is what they call sustainability strategies or impact strategies, where the investors are more proactively and consciously pursuing a theory of change and seeking development outputs and outcomes. So that's a large number. But then at the same time, you see that SDG stock take that I just mentioned, that 85% of the goals are still off track. The estimates in terms of financing to kind of get us back on track is that we need an additional $4 trillion of capital invested per year in order to meet the SDGs. So what is the disconnect? Part of that disconnect is that the criteria that the investors use in order to allocate their capital is not really fit for purpose for emerging markets. Hence, that capital is very biased towards investing in developed markets. What we did in the JP Morgan DFI was create a methodology, and we didn't do this by ourselves. We took inspiration from what the official development institutions like the World Bank and other leading development finance institutions do to help measure the development impact thesis of transactions that address the development gaps in emerging markets and advance the SDGs, and then use that to provide the investors the information that they need in order to be able to allocate capital from those sustainable pockets that they have. And by doing so, mobilize more of that sustainable capital to the places that they're needed most. So that's something that we've seen to get over a little bit of those limitations and bring more sustainable capital to our APAC clients.
So what are some of the projects that the JP Morgan DFI has been involved in Asia Pacific where it's played a role in mobilizing capital for sustainable development? I'd love for you to tell us about how it came to be and also what the outcome was.
Last year, during the spring, we helped a renewable energy company in India raise $400 million to finance their expansion of both renewable energy generation as well as storage and related infrastructure. And this is really interesting because India, if you look at their renewable energy generation capacity, about a third of their energy mix comes from renewable energy, which is pretty average if you compare it to other developing countries. But if you actually look at the amount of carbon emissions per capita coming from India, it's actually quite above average. And that's because the two-thirds of energy that is non-renewable in India comes from pretty carbon-intensive sources. They mostly come from coal versus other less carbon-intensive non-renewable sources like gas. So India does have an important role to play to transition to renewable energy in order for us to meet our climate goals. Also, we all know that still there's a lot of development gaps in access just to energy and the energy needs for the economy to grow. So again, renewable energy generation, very important for both their economic development and for their sustainability.
Right.
This was a green bond, which meant that the company already had obligations to report allocations of the proceeds of the bond to eligible projects, here being developing those solar modules and developing those battery storage facilities. But what we did was we added a development impact framework, which allowed them to look at some of the other development impacts that are associated with their plans and to monitor and report their progress against that. So that included things like water efficiency. The company planned to move to robotic cleaning of those solar modules through which they would save a lot of water. That was something that they measured and they put specific metrics and targets around. It included things like solid waste generation. There's a lot of waste that actually comes from these modules when they need to be repaired or to be replaced or from the construction and the various processes that they have to go through. And the company produced about 765 tons of solid waste per year, and they created processes, and this is in line with the circular economy, to get to zero waste to landfill. Included things like, of course, employment generation, and not just quantity of jobs, but quality of jobs, skilled jobs, diverse jobs. They had specific targets around gender diversity, taking their workforce from about 7% female to 30%. So there was a lot of these kind of direct developmental effects that they had, and we helped them measure and put a framework around. And then the last thing I would mention is that we all know that the transition to renewable energy is not just about generation, but it's also about storage, it's also about transmission. You need that entire value chain. This client was not just in the generation sector, but was helping build out that value chain that really could have that spillover effect into the broader economy and help the transition happen at large. So by putting together these additional frameworks and metrics and targets, we then help the company reach out to investors that go beyond climate investors, that are also looking for social outcomes, that are also looking for, you know, theories of economic growth and economic change. And we were able to craft them into this transaction and broaden the pool of investors that they were able to access. So this was one of India's first bonds that were issued after a hiatus of over in a year that they hadn't gone to market. And the bond actually was able to see some yield tightening over its initial pricing target when it ultimately settled.
Wow, that's really impressive. It really speaks to the complexity of the situation and yet the holistic solution that you've come up with. I want to turn to the Impact Disclosure Task Force. Now, I understand JP Morgan's DFI is the co-chair of the task force. Can you briefly discuss what this is, how this initiative will enhance transparency and standardization in impact investing, and particularly in the context of emerging markets in Asia Pacific?
Going back to the problem that I mentioned, that you have these 40 trillion to 4 trillion of sustainable capital, but the majority of that is not flowing towards where it's needed most, that's a financial infrastructure problem. And what the task force really does, which is a collection of some of your largest emerging market investors and underwriters, it's to try to fix that piping. So what we're doing is threefold. One is we're trying to create a standard that is more fit for purpose for emerging markets. The problems that I see in the current infrastructure is that one of the ways for you to get sustainable capital is for you to have a specific project that you can ring fence and say, this is a sustainable project, and it's going to build a solar farm here, or it's going to build a wind farm there. But emerging markets typically don't have that many projects already fully costed out that will be large enough for capital markets to finance. So they're cut off because of the lack of projects. We hear that in the literature all the time.
Right.
Another way to access sustainable capital is through having a high ESG score. And the ESG score providers really look at your current state. How green or brown are you today? And how well do you factor on board governance or diversity and things like that? But it's ultimately, how ESG are you today? And emerging markets, because they are starting from a lower base, lower level of maturity, they'll score lower on those ESG factors. So that's commonly known in literature as income bias, and we see that a lot as well. Both of those factors are driving sustainable capital away, again, from where it's needed most.
I see.
The task force will solve this problem with three approaches. One is to create a framework that is more fit for purpose for emerging markets. That is one that is entity-focused, impact-focused, looking at outputs and outcomes rather than eligible expenditures. It's forward-looking, so it recognizes that you could actually have more impact if you are achieving incremental outputs and outcomes in a location that is operating off a lower baseline. And it's context-dependent, meaning that the set of metrics that you measure in India would be different than the ones you might measure for Japan, or you might measure for Korea, because they have just a different local context that they're operating in.
Got it. So that's the first element of the task force. What about the second?
The second is to ensure that this data is getting to the right place at the right time. And so that's where we're trying to create some market infrastructure where this type of impact data could be aggregated and distributed to the investors who are making the investment allocation decisions when they're making those investment allocation decisions. And the third component of the task force is to create a network of third-party services that could help validate the data, because trust is really important in sustainable finance. And emerging markets are often still developing the processes needed in order to elevate the veracity of the data that they publish. So when you have third parties to go and validate and verify that data, and again, use that verified data to be disseminated to investors, you can build the trust to be able to mobilize that sustainable capital to the emerging market entities and the APAC entities that need it.
That's great. So how does JP Morgan DFI plan to expand the market for development finance and grow the pool of capital interested in transactions that offer both financial and development returns in Asia Pacific?
Matt, this is a systemic problem. So it's something that the JP Morgan DFI is definitely going to try to do individually, but it's also something that we're going to have to try to address together with other participants in capital markets. Individually, JP Morgan DFI will continue to work with our clients in APAC to produce the type of frameworks that will help them access those sustainable pools of capital. But also more systemically, we're going to be working with other underwriters and investors in the capital markets to create the standards and infrastructure necessary to be able to bring development finance into the fold of ESG. Or in other words, redefine ESG criteria in a way that development outcomes become automatically eligible. And so that way you can really get the scale that is needed to address the magnitude of the challenge here that we face.
So when can we expect the guidance from the task force to be released?
The Impact Disclosure Task Force intends to publish its guidance in April of this year. And I encourage all of our listeners to review that guidance and provide feedback and to join this effort, because the only way that we can really scale financing to address the SDG gap at the magnitude that is required is for the entire industry to coalesce around this objective and to join forces.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to looking at the outcomes of that task force. To recap, today we delved into the latest development in sustainable finance, focusing on the evolving trends shaping development finance in Asia Pacific's emerging markets and how the Impact Disclosure Task Force will benefit the region. If you're interested in related episodes, be sure to check out Arslan's recent podcast on JP Morgan's DFI's annual report and the progress of the Impact Disclosure Task Force if you haven't already. Arslan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another episode of What's the Deal? We hope you enjoyed this conversation. I'm your host, Matthew Chan. Until next time, goodbye.
Thanks for listening to What's the Deal? If you've enjoyed this conversation, we hope you'll review, rate, and subscribe to JP Morgan's Making Sense to stay on top of the latest industry news and trends. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. To stay ahead of the curve, sign up for JP Morgan's In Context newsletter, packed full of market views and expert insights delivered straight to you. To subscribe, just visit jpmorgan.com/in-context. This material was prepared by the Investment Banking Group of JP Morgan Securities LLC and not the firm's research department. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the purchase, sale, or tender of any financial instrument.